good afternoon. We are sleep deprived and hungry, but we're here to give you an update on how the session's going. So far, we have, and largely because we adopted budget targets on March 21st, and I think that was probably the earliest that's ever been done, certainly in the relevant time frame that we've been around. And it's really put the power in that back in the hands of all the rest of the legislators, especially the chairs. And they have completed, and we have passed off both the House and Senate floors and sent to the governor 11 finance bills, veterans, housing, higher ed, legacy, agriculture, public safety, early education, K-12 education I just signed, jobs, deep fakes, and the commerce bill. We have five that are done, but we haven't taken up on both houses of floors yet to send to the governor. Paid family medical leave, which they're doing in the Senate right now. Environment, which we're doing in the House right now. Cannabis, which we will do later today. State government finance and human services. And so in terms of bills that are still wrapping up final details, capital investment, transportation, taxes, and health and children and families. So where those are, they have pretty good agreement amongst the chairs. They have spreadsheet agreement in taxes, which they released last night. I believe they have spreadsheet agreement in health, but it's a very complicated spreadsheet to put together, so they're still working on the details of that. It's probably the longest spreadsheet of any budget area. So we feel really good with 16 done and 4 still on their way. In the next 4 days, we imagine there'll be a ton of work done because each day at the legislature right now is like 10 years, and people can really do a lot in a short period of time at the end of session.
Hi, everybody. Thank you. I will echo what the speaker said. We believe we are moving along on a path to get this done. We heard voters tell us they were tired of gridlock, and we have continued to show throughout this session that we came here ready to work on day one. We had committee hearings on all these bills. We heard from the public. We took amendments from authors, both Republicans and DFL authors or DFL members on all of these bills. And we're just excited that, you know, we're proving to Minnesotans that we heard them and we're going to get things done.
Both chambers are having a little difficulty with Republicans dropping the plow. I don't know if they call it dropping the plow in the Senate or if they have a different phrase, but the rules do provide us mechanisms to get the work done in the time that we have left. The rules allow the minority the right to speak, but they also allow the majority the right to pass bills, and so we will get the work done. And we're ready for questions.
How do you mean when you say... What are you talking, like calling the question or something?
If we have to call the question to get the work done, we will. I mean, in the Senate, it's far worse than it's been in the House. 270 amendments on a bonding bill is oppressive to every person involved in any element of this process, including the people, the nonpartisan staff who have to draft those. So in my opinion, it would be very appropriate on that bill in the Senate, but hopefully they can come to an agreement and not have to do that.
Yeah, so we've already had one all-nighter just this week, and watching, you know, and looking at the people at the front desk, I was very worried to have people drive home after being here for 24 hours. And so Senator Champion has talked to both myself and Minority Leader Mark Johnson that we, you know, we need to keep the process moving. We need to have a very thorough and thoughtful discussion. But can we do it in a way that is respectful for staff? Because we don't want somebody to be here. You know, we've worked long hours and we've got a lot done this year, and we don't want somebody to get into an accident driving home late at night. So we, you know, have had that discussion on how do we do this to make it keep the discussion thoughtful, but to the point on the bill so that we keep everybody safe.
Well, the transportation folks are really close to a completed spreadsheet, and I think as soon as they have a completed spreadsheet, they'll be scheduling maybe both press avail and a hearing, but at the very least a hearing, and pretty soon, I think.
Certainly you know that. I mean, your leadership probably know that those two major items are there.
Yeah, I think that the chairs have intimated that those will be pieces of the package, but we right now are focusing on a lot of details and a lot of bills. And in terms of the transportation area, we know that the chairs are in good shape to finish up those bills.
So are you saying there could be a gas tax increase and the delivery fee both?
I know there's been, go ahead.
First of all, I would call it a road maintenance fee. So we'll just clarify that. It is to help improve road maintenance. And as she said, I think we'll leave that. I think the chairs have worked hard on their proposals, and I think I would rather leave it to them to roll it out and have that discussion.
When the voters sent you here to control the House and the Senate, were they counting on significant tax cuts and significant tax increases that will impact just about everybody?
I think what people expected us to do, like the leader said, is to break through gridlock and get things done. And we have had decades of underinvestment, most particularly in our K-12 system, higher education, early education. And you saw when the governor was inaugurated and he gave his speech, he said he wanted to make a significant dent in child poverty in Minnesota and make sure that Minnesota was the best place in the country to raise a child. And I think this budget that we are enacting in this Democratic trifecta serves that very, very well. I don't think people are surprised that Democrats want to invest in education and healthcare and taking care of people. And in terms of money going back to people, there is a lot of money going back to people in all sorts of different ways. Child care providers will get a raise. Those who take care of people with disabilities will get a raise. So Minnesotans are receiving back this surplus.
And I think if you look at headlines this morning, it talks about the tax bill. As I said, when the bill passed off the Senate floor, this is the largest tax cut in history. And so I think, again, as the speaker said, there are money going back to people in a variety of ways, in a variety of these bills. On the campaign trail, we heard about child care. We heard about housing. We heard about people want their kids to be safe in school, and they want to be safe in their communities. They want strong schools. And I think we, with the budget, overall total budget package we have, we are delivering that for the state of Minnesota.
Republicans say the tax increases and fee increases will be bigger than the tax cuts. Is that accurate?
They have some pretty shifty math, I would say, because the tax cuts are $3 billion in the first biennium and $1.3 billion in the tails and ongoing, and in certain of those categories, growing. So usually when you see comparisons that Republicans are making, they're not counting the same number of years in both sides of the comparison.
Do you know how many more people will be exempt from Social Security under the tax bill from paying tax on Social Security?
The tax folks know that, but I know that 76% of Minnesotans will pay no taxes on their Social Security income.
And the other outrage factor from the Republicans today was that the means testing for the rebates, that the people that make more than a certain level are being left out, even though they pay taxes too. So.
Well, I think our tax chair in the House has been very eloquent on this topic. During the pandemic, it was very, very difficult for many people, and many people fell far behind. Other people did quite well. A lot of people who were able to work from home actually saved money. So the way we looked at returning the surplus in the form of rebates was that it should be means tested so that the people who need the money get it.
When you said the tax bill, do you first of all have any guess as to when we'll see language? Just because the chairs made references to a couple of fairly significant policy provisions that folks, me included, are hoping to get a look at. One was sort of that teacher retirement change, and the other one was the ETABs.
So the language is either being finalized right now or it has been finalized at the revisers. And so staff, we have fabulous staff here. I say that all the time. I am very appreciative of all the work both the partisan and nonpartisan staff do. They are working their hardest and nonstop to get this stuff done. And so I don't know when that specific bill will be released, but I do know that people are working basically around the clock to get language done.
We have to wait for an entire 300-page bill to be revised and printed to get just maybe a page or two of language if they've agreed to the page or two of language.
You'd have to ask the tax chairs. And well, they're probably in a room proofreading right now. They've done things in public. One of the things that's been kind of cool about the two of us working together is that we have brought back, to a large extent, conference committees the way it's supposed to work. And the tax conference committee was the best example of that, where all the offers back and forth were made in public. You know, one of the things that's hard about doing that all in public is you put people's things that they care about on a sheet, and then it comes off the sheet and the amounts change. And so that kind of plays with people's emotions before the deal is reached. But in the tax conference committee, I think you saw all that going back and forth. So I don't know if the chairs are planning another hearing to go through the language, but my guess is that they will.
Speaker, there was a desire to wrap up today on this legislative day. It appears that all signs point to that is nearly impossible. What do the next few days look like? I mean, are you guys working through the weekend? Do you think you can end before Monday, or will you take every minute of Monday's day to get things done?
I think due to where we are with the drafting, we might take all the way through Monday. We will be down one member who will be traveling for a family commitment that, you know, you can't ask colleges and universities when to schedule their graduations, but we have been 70 strong on everything. So provided all my people stay healthy, we should be able to maintain the governing majority through the adjournment date.
Who's going
to
be
gone? Who's going to be? You can read about it tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Just on another question on the taxes. My understanding is that Chair Rest said last night that the local sales tax measures will be approved for going on the ballot, but then there'll be a 2-year moratorium. Is that correct from your understanding?
That's exactly how much I know about it.
I have heard that was under discussion. Again, I don't know. I have walked through the spreadsheets and discussions with Chair Rest multiple times. I know that was under discussion, but I don't know. I know they're doing local option sales tax, even though the chair in the House has some concerns about just increasing sales tax overall. A lot of these were provisions that were in last year's bill. The cities and communities were expecting them and hoping on them, and so I know they'll be in the bill. I know they've had a discussion on doing a pause to kind of reevaluate, but I don't know where we are, what the final decision was.
Do you know what's happening with equal tabs or sports betting?
They are talking about that in the tax conference committee. The House brought a position to eliminate the open all feature, and the House position was based on living up to the original agreement that we made when we agreed to build the Viking Stadium, and we agreed to that revenue form. I remember from that time period lots of people doing this with their fingers, you know, the slide motion, that whatever we were doing electronically was going to be just like a paper pull tab. People were saying that, and they were making these motions that indicated that's what was intended. But then there have been games that have been approved that violate that agreement.
So that is going to likely change. I know they're concerned the language is going to be even worse than what they had seen before for the charities and the bars and the restaurants.
I think that the tax conference committee is working on that language right now. I don't know that it's in exact final form of how it's going to come out, but I'm sure they'll be prepared to talk about it when it does.
What's the agreement around the nursing issue?
Can I get back to answering that? I know we are well aware that we've all heard from charities and from our local charities, and so we understand that that may impact them, and so we are looking at is there a balance to get that, and then is there a way to, again, keep some of those charities that we've heard from. So that is part of the large discussion. I don't know where they landed, but that whole package is under discussion.
Are you still ruling out bonding with Republicans, Giovanni Mill?
You know, we have said all along that we would like to do, the House passed early on a bipartisan GO bond bill. It failed in the Senate. They voted down projects in their own districts. We have since then continued to have discussions with Minority Leader Johnson and the Republican caucus. They have continued to tie it to taxes, and we have continued to say those are two very separate. We have this, you know, very largest tax cut bill in history. But even with that being said, we are continuing to have discussions.
If you had a bonding bill, what would you then use that additional general fund cash that would be freed up for if it wasn't for taxes?
Additional capital investment. It's in the capital investment target. The target sheet was signed by the Speaker, the Majority Leader, and the Governor, and those are the targets. With regard to keeping the nurses at the bedside, we are taking that out of the health finance bill negotiations. We have set up a new conference committee on the Senate floor. Conferees were appointed today. I know Senator Murphy and Senator Abler and
Senator Bolden.
And then on the House, we appointed Representative Feist and Representative Davids and one other person, Representative Berg. And so they will be meeting later today in a Keeping Nurses at the Bedside conference committee. And I think it was really important to set up that separate conference committee because Representative Feist has been working with all of the interested parties very, very hard. And she has a revised set of language that really the public needs to see and we need to have testimony on. I think when folks see what she has done with the bill, they will see the more than 30 accommodations she's made to the Minnesota Hospital Association in the drafting of that bill. You will see the Mayo exemption that she drafted into that bill. And so I think that that standalone conference committee will give that issue the space that it needs so the public clearly understands what we're talking about, what we're doing in that bill, and what we're not talking about and we're not doing in that bill. I know in testimony today she will have a former hospital executive testify that it's a really pretty straightforward bill. And at this point of where the draft is, that we shouldn't continue to have problems with the hospital association because it is in good condition.
I want to clarify. I think it was supposed to be Senator Bolden, but it might be somebody else, so we might have to go back and check on that.
Are you still confident that one is going to get done?
Yes.
By Monday as well?
Yes. I mean, nurses were really holding our society together during COVID. When COVID first started, our nurses in our hospitals didn't have the protective personal equipment that they needed. They didn't know what this virus was capable of. They had to bring it home on themselves and to their families, and they are really stretched to the breaking point. And nurses need to know that we have heard them and that we are sending some relief. They need a little bit of strength in terms of their conversations with hospitals to be heard. Decades ago, nurses were central to hospital functioning. They had a much bigger role in determining what the staffing was like on each of the floors. And in recent years, what our nurses have felt like is that they're treated more like a line on a spreadsheet. What they want to do is they want to work with hospital administrators to make sure we have safe staffing. And in fact, they have a professional obligation as a part of their professional code of responsibility to not take patients when they can't safely care for them. But they are very frustrated because for years they have been complaining about unsafe staffing levels. And in order to provide the best care to patients, we really need to resolve this continued issue of not enough nurses. And there's provisions in the bill that would help bring more nurses into the profession. There's loan forgiveness. And then there's provisions in the bill that would allow nurses to have a voice to articulate their concerns about staffing.
To pass the Uber and Lyft bill in the Senate?
We are working on that. I don't have a crystal ball, and so my staff continues to count on every bill.
Do you feel confident to bring it to the floor now?
We've had many discussions on it, so.
How close are you to a peace in the valley agreement on the merger with with Fairview and Sanford?
I know that there's a coalition of health organizations that got together and sent some proposed Peace in the Valley language. I think it was emailed to me at 10 o'clock last night. I saw it this morning and got it in the hands of the negotiators. And I'm not sure if that language does reach Peace in the Valley, but I had a good conversation with Representative Robert Bierman about it, and I know he continues to work on that.
So is sports gambling death this session?
I think we're probably out of time. In the House, it has two or three more committees. And I don't think we're not going to be able to take people away from the floor to have that bill move through the committees that it would need to. I think that there's a coalition of folks who are still really interested in making sure that that gets done. I just don't think it'll get done this session.
So we can kill that.
If the Minnesota legislature was a football game, we're 2 minutes before the end of the first half, and then we'll have an interim, we'll go home, we'll rest, we'll recover, and we'll work on a lot of these bills during the interim, and we'll come back and we'll have a whole other session, we believe, starting around February 12th in 2024.
Back on the capital investment bill or bonding bill or whatever it's going to be called, Republicans say there's $300 million for nonprofits in there, mostly in the metro area. Can you comment on that?
So we had the discussion in Rules Committee yesterday, and Senator Pappas said all of those proposals and everything in her bill has been vetted by MMB. She makes them fill out this form that MMB has so that it provides who they are, make sure that they are financially feasible. She's even gone and looked up on their website, who's on their board, had those conversations. So these are vetted projects. So they are vetted nonprofits and vetted projects. She likes to make sure they're shovel ready. I give the example that one of those nonprofits that I believe is in the bill is the St. Stephen's Shelter, Simpson House. That is a project that has been vetted. That is a project that has been in previous bill. It is money to provide a homeless shelter to they kind of merge with the group, and there needs to be either improvements or a larger homeless shelter. That's a service to the state. They partner with local governments to provide services to the people that are unhoused. And so that is something that benefits the community. So these are projects that actually do have some state attachment, and they do have some benefit to the community. And so it came up in the Rules Committee. Are they doing a service? You know, it's usually the Republicans said that, you know, it's usually stuff that is a service to the state. And I would argue that what St. Stephen's is doing with Simpson House is a service to the state by providing that housing. So there is a bunch of money in that bill. I think Senator Pappas said that several of those are tied to housing issues. And so if it's, you know, I believe we did bonding with some other projects similar to St. Stephen's in the past. And so this is something that I do believe those nonprofits are helping their communities and the state.
Is it too metro-centric? They say there's only 4 nonprofits in greater Minnesota.
Some of these are members' requests. And so if they come from, you know, they're coming from members. So that's who requested them.
Well, and I would say in the House where we passed the bipartisan GO bill and cash bill, I mean, our priorities really reflected the entire state because the Republicans chose to collaborate with us. In the cash bill, we have carried over our commitment to those Republicans who wanted to be part of the solution and part of the investments in the state of Minnesota. So there are projects all over the state. There's some fairly significant investments in greater Minnesota in Republican projects.
Time for one more question. Is there anything else that you're probably out of time on of note, and can you assure the public that there will not be a spillover special session?
I think we're on the path to get these done. The revisers are at work. We have, you know, moving these bills along. As you've looked at the last few days, the Senate Republicans have been taking a very long time. The workers' comp bill, which has bipartisan support, is supported by the chamber, and the group is the chamber, labor. So this is a coalition that comes together. It's a bipartisan bill. They spent an enormously long time just talking about that bill that usually passes in 15 minutes. And so we're moving forward. We would hope the other party would join us to pass these bills in a timely fashion that help Minnesotans. So some of this is, do they want to continue gridlock, or do they want to help us?
I just had a follow-up on Max's Uber question later, Dietzick. Are you confident that you have 34 votes for the rest of the bills remaining if Uber bill doesn't pass? Because there was talk about some members threatening.
I don't have a crystal ball, and I continually am meeting with members, and our caucus continually having discussions on all the bills as we bring them forward to make sure that we have 34 votes.
Thank you.
Have you gotten assurances from Mayo Clinic that if they get this carve-out, they won't? They will go forward with these billions in investments.
We've had a lot of conversations with Mayo, and we will continue to.
Thank you.
Have you assured you that they'll continue building these projects?
Will there be a plan for this?